Warning, the following program is designed for casual wrestling fans and is meant purely for entertainment. If you're SAWFT, proceed at your own risk. Viewer discretion is advised. Brother, I'm going on a wild Hulk Hogan. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick out on this choke horse. But it's no horse bar, middle finger like I'm Stone Cold. What is good, ladies and gentlemen? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Slappin' Meat Wrestling Podcast. A surprise episode, didn't let anyone know. Just wanted to do one final, you know, episode for the year for 2024. You know, I did the year-end awards, and that was the last time you saw me and Wavy D together. I did the one final, you know, my final thoughts of 2024 episode, the last episode that we did. And then I kind of called it, you know, the end of the year, right? Well, over the last week and a half that we've been gone, you know, I've had some thoughts about wrestling, and I knew this would happen. But I wanted to put together one final thing, one final episode. As I'm recording it, it's 8 p.m. Eastern time on the 31st, New Year's Eve, the last day. We have 4 hours remaining in the year of 2024. And so I wanted to say goodbye to the year with sort of what I'm looking forward to in what we would call the debut of WWE in 2025. So we'll talk about that. Tony Khan ran another pay-per-view, World's End. I saw bits and pieces of it. Wasn't really paying that much attention, but I saw some things that happened that I wanted to talk about. I have a rant, as you guys should expect. I always have a rant, on tap. I'll talk about the last Raw we had on, for USA Network as we head into the new Netflix era of Monday Night Raw, and then what I am expecting for the debut week, which starts on Friday, by the way, Friday the 3rd, what I'm expecting for the debut week of WWE in 2025. Before we get there, as always, use the link in the description. You get the, you know, through the WWE shop, or if you're booking through Expedia. And just want to go ahead and get the well wishes for a happy 2025. For those of you who are listening, you know, as this drops, or, you know, in Europe or other parts of the world outside of the U.S. that are already into, you know, the new year, happy new year from the jump. To those who, you know, by time you probably get to listen to this, it'll be the first, happy new year to you guys. As again, just to sort of reiterate, this episode will 100% be the last, well, I'm not going to say 100%. The next show between me and Wavy D will be the 14th. So 2 weeks from today. As I stated, I do want to watch New Year's Eve live next week. I may have a show to start season 4 as my sort of New Year's Eve review, debut week review episode. Not this upcoming Friday, but next Friday. That's probably what's going to be the first episode of season 4. On the 14th of January, me and Wavy D will be back. Make mention to this, Thirsty Tuesday will pick back up on the 14th. We're going to do sort of like a Four Corners tournament, AEW, NXT, main roster WWE and TNA. And how I'm going to do this, I'm having the Discord vote for who's in it, right? Go to the link, the Google. Now, guys, I made this pretty plain. I thought that y'all can vote as many times. The whole goal is for, you know, if there's a certain person on a roster, say, for NXT or main roster that maybe isn't getting a lot of support, go ahead and do 4 or 5 entries for that person, right? The whole idea is put it much, right? So I'm going to give that voting power until January the 4th. So you have till Friday, or excuse me, Saturday. You have till essentially Saturday to get those votes in. Vote as many times as you want. The Discord will predict or who will select who's in the bracket. We're going to take 8 from each company or section, and that's what determines Thirsty Tuesday, right? That new bracket, right? And that'll be debuted on the first episode between me and Wavy D on the 14th. Just get that out of the way. So let's break in. Let's talk about this. Get the AEW stuff out of the way. Breaking news. Your boy Weed Too Deep on Saturday the 4th will be at AEW Collision. The arena that is at, there's a specific seat in the arena that AEW Collision is running, the Bojangles Coliseum, that I love this seat, right? The way it's designed, I think it's the only place in the arena that is seated like this. It's at the very top of this, you know, 8,000. That's very 6,000. And that's even being gracious to say 6,000 people can fit in this arena. Not exactly the how many seats are there, but I think there's about, with, you know, the floor seats, I think you could fit about 5,500 people in a wrestling setup. That's taking away the back, you know, behind the stage. So, like I said, there's probably somewhere around 6,000 to 8,000 seats in this arena. And there's a particular seat section where, and I think there's like 4 different sections in this arena, if I remember correctly, where it's like this. We're at the very top of the arena, there's 2 rows with 1 seat in the row. And I love that because I go to wrestling events by myself. And I know what Junkyard James and Cody may say, well, we were going to the show. Why aren't you going with us? Here's the reason. It's not them two. It's the rest of the group. I'm going to be honest with you. It's the rest of the group who are not necessarily like, you know, they're sort of homers. They can't really take jokes. Because I'm a go to the show, and if I sit next to people, I'm a joke about the show, right? And so that's sort of the thing that, you know. And plus, when I go to events like this, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of going to events, one, where I'm not the end seat, but two, where I got to get up because people keep going to the bathroom and stuff, right? I don't understand people who buy tickets to events, right, and then get up and miss half the event because they're in the bathroom or they get in concessions. Get all that shit done before the show starts, right? That's sort of like I once I sit down in my seat, I'm not leaving that seat, right? Because I paid for a particular section of the show, right? But I will be at Collision on the 4th on Saturday. So keep an eye out if you watch. Keep an eye out for Junkyard James and Cody, but also keep an eye out for me as well. But let's talk about World's End. They just ran this pay-per-view. And not really paying a whole lot of attention to most of it, I watched and paid attention to segments of it. Right now, there was really only one match that I really cared about. And that was Mercedes Moné versus Chris Statlander. I'm just 100% sold that Chris Statlander can be a future superstar in the professional wrestling business. And let me tell you something. I'm super harsh on Mercedes Moné. And watching this match and seeing how people talk to her, I got to say this. She's a very good in-ring performer. She's a very good in-ring performer. Had this match happened you know, back in July or September, and it wasn't like a recency bias thing where I was giving out awards, but right, she put on a match of the year contender, right? Had it been at a more useful event, right? Like, the match itself was really good, you know. I, and so I don't necessarily have a problem with my issue with Monet is her personal choices. I think she thinks she's better than she is, or she's worth more than she really is. I'll say this. She's a very good wrestler, and I don't think that I myself have given her enough credit for her in-ring ability. Her promo skills are kind of mid, and that to me is where I lose interest in Mercedes Moné, is the lack of promo ability. But from a X's and O's perspective, that was a very good match. And I'm just saying, WWE, please go after Chris Statlander. I don't know what you need to offer her to bring her to the WWE, but I would love to have Chris Statlander, even if it's just to have another somewhat bigger girl on the roster to put against Rhea Ripley, right? Because at the current main roster status, you have Raquel and Charlotte to go against Rhea as a legitimate big woman. I mean, Bianca's close, right, in terms of height for Rhea, and that's definitely going to be a match. You got Jade. But just to have that extra person in the mid-card as well that could really make the mid-card scene feel very, very special, I think Statlander could do that, just personally. Outside of Moné versus Statlander, though, the rest of the card was pretty mid to me, right? It was sort of what I would expect an AEW pay-per-view to be. Nothing necessarily important happened. Tony Khan has this thing he does, it feels like, from you know, sort of talking to Cody, and more so Cody than James, but talking to Cody about sort of what World's End is representing and how Tony Khan books, I get the feeling that he sort of books on a year-to-year basis, right? And so starting tomorrow with their simulcast on Max and TBS, he's going to open up the new chapter called 2025, and he'll end that at World's End 2025. And the whole idea is to sort of end stories that he'll pick up in the next year, right? He'll pick up with brand new stories going, right? So a lot of what World's End was about was closing stories. And what I liked, though, was there seems to be an open book moving towards the beginning of 2025 of potentially new stories, which I like that they put in their booking. There are segments of AEW that I can get somewhat behind. I like Kyle Fletcher. I do. I think he can be a very good young heel in AEW if they can put something behind him. I think Omega coming back is very big for this company, and something that, you know, will interest me. I'm interested in Orange Cassidy a little bit. Maybe it was more so the Trent Beretta heel work that sort of got me into that, but I'm somewhat into Orange Cassidy. I'm into the Jon Moxley Death Riders arc and how that turns out, right? And so there's certain things that are highly entertaining. But notice that a lot of the things that are highly entertaining are the sports entertainment aspects of the show, right? I notice I didn't mention I'm into Ospreay. I think Ospreay is a fantastic in-ring worker. That's not going to get me to watch the show, right? What's going to get me are characters and storytelling. And if you can do that, Tony Khan, and you can get someone like me who's into characters and storytelling into your product, I really think you'll have a really good year, right? I know there's a lot of people who assume that We2Deep hates AEW and wants them to go under. That's not the case. I want them to be competitive. Here's why. Because when there wasn't an AEW, we were getting sucker and succotash dog food with Roman Reigns on by Baron Corbin, as sort of like the main event of a SmackDown, right? And so AEW existing, there was a reason it was needed. What I feel happened was that sort of mentality. What happened was WWE felt the pressure of competition and got better, and AEW stopped considering it itself as competition and tried to be in glorified indie show, and that only markets to a certain people, right? With WWE felt the competition, they brought back The Rock and brought in Cena and Austin and all of that, and got a casual audience back into the product that really could have fed into that, could have, should have been utilized by AEW to grow that company. But instead, they sort of hunkered down and stayed indie, glorified indie show, right? So Tony Khan needs to find a way to, yeah, book to your sickos. That's fine. Give them what they want, but also try to book towards a more casual fan and audience like myself. Give us, you know, a little bit of the show to be like, I want to watch just for that, right? I'll watch for the Death Riders. That's fine, right? And so that's sort of, you know, the show did a very good job sort of maybe bringing in a new audience. If you could tell me some stories, right? Like, I'm not behind Adam Page at all. I don't get the whole thing behind Adam Page. When I see Adam Page, I sort of just see sort of like metrosexual cowboy, right? When I see Adam Page, I see, and you know, as a country music fan, I see metrosexual, right? There's a lot of metrosexuals in country music, and what basically metrosexual, for those who don't know, are like city boys who pretend to be country boys, right? And so, you know, they put on the blue jeans and the cowboy hat and the cowboy boots, and they try to talk with a southern accent, and all the while they live in a million-dollar mansion. They've never touched dirt or worked on a farm a day in their life, but their music sort of portrays that, in, right? And that's what I see with Adam Page. I sort of see fake cowboy, right? And it doesn't work with me, right? He doesn't get, you know, his promo work isn't necessarily the best. His in-ring ability isn't necessarily the best. And I'm not, I don't understand the sort of praise behind Adam Page, right? I understand Ospreay. Ospreay's not hard to understand. He's one of the best X's and O's, high flyer style wrestler in the world. I get that, right? But there's a lot to maybe, there's pieces of AEW that I like. Death Riders, Chris Statlander, Christian. I like Christian Cage. Orange Cassidy has sort of grown on me. And so there's pieces of this company that I think could lead. Like, I'll just say, MJF, I'm completely sold off of MJF. At this time last year, at December 31st, 2023, there was all this buzz around MJF potentially coming to WWE and every, right? And the casual audience, the sort of casual wrestling community section of, you know, the online world, myself, Wavy, Milwaukee Mike, Nerdy D, we were all sort of praising MJF and said, you know, if he jumped ship, it would be very big for him and very big for the industry. And I'm just going to be honest with you. He went away, he disappeared, and he's come back. And I don't know. He feels washed to me. He's good in the ring, but I don't necessarily think he's the greatest in ring worker. And I just think his promos just seem to be super corny to me at this point, right? The gimmick hasn't changed. It's hard to take him serious as a heel because we've seen him as a babyface. So you sort of ruined any mystique of him as a heel because we know that you could be a good guy, right? And so you're just nothing really there for me to. I don't really buy into MJF anymore, right? But there's pieces in the company that I like. Let me tell you something I don't like: the Continental Classic. I'm not a big fan of the Continental Classic. I like tournaments, that's fine. But doing like a yearly first of the Continental Championship, which is the prize for winning the what they call the C2. If that's the prize, but then you win the title and you're supposed to defend it. But Okada won it last year, really hasn't defended the title all that well. I'm excited because it appears that Omega Okada is going to be the feud. If I'm reading how they ended that segment in, if I'm reading it correctly, maybe that's where they head to, and that's exciting because that's a big feud that works with that audience, but it also works for me as a more sort of middle of the road casual fan who understands that there's a feud between Okada and Omega, who has seen Okada and Omega several times before and understands that they could put on banger of a match and tell story with it, right? I'm interested in that. You know, Adam Copeland returned. I thought it was a decent return. I think it was definitely a surprise return. And it makes sense if you understand that he lives in the Asheville area. And Wednesday show, New Year's Day show is in Asheville. But, you know, I'm a Carolina boy. I live in the Carolinas. So anytime someone comes out, you know, and helps my area, my people, right, I'll support. Look, Tony Khan, for as much shit as I give him about lack of understanding of how to book, the dude has a heart of gold. And I'll support him with that. The dude has a heart of gold. He cares about people. I may not necessarily agree with everything he believes in or and all of that. That's fine. We can talk about that later on a different conversation, right? But dude has a heart of gold. And for him to do this show, Fight for the Fallen on the 1st in Asheville as a completely 100% donated proceeds to Western North Carolina, bro, I support the hell out of that, right? And I love that, right? And you know, FTR, I feel like they're a little bit, you know, especially Dash, I think he's the bald one, or Cash, I don't know, the bald one. He comes off a little bit like corporate, you know, Glazer a little bit in some of his promos and stuff. Talking about AEW is such the best place to work for, right? And I don't mean anything negative to him. I wouldn't glaze that hard for a boss. I'm just going to be honest with you. You may like where you work, but I don't know if I would do all that, right? But I support the hell out of them, Adam Copeland, and everyone who got this set up for Fight of the Fallen 2 in the Asheville area. I hope the show goes well. There is a snowstorm on the way, so I hope everyone stays safe. But I support the hell out of that with Tony Khan. You get major props for me to end the year, Tony Khan, by beginning 2025 as a charity show to my people, right? The Western Carolinas need some entertainment. They need some help even still months after the hurricane hit. So I support that, right? But the return was kind of mid, I'll be honest, right? I see where it goes now, though. Copeland's going to get Moxley. It's going to be a very good match, right? And there's going to be people who I like on Twitter or X and in the internet that are going to call this like, they're using the WWE people again. I think we got, you know, as a hater of the, if you're going to hate, you got to come up with new material, right? Like, I can't sit here and be like, here we go again. Fifth year in a row, we're using XW. At this point, Moxley's an AEW original. You can't sort of call him XWWE. We know he is, but the person, Moxley, the boy's been in AEW for 5 years. Like, you can't hate that he's being used as the main feature. He's the best thing they got on the roster. And Copeland is a draw, and you got to use the draws. And this is fine. 100% understood, right? And from a roster perspective, Copeland may be the second or third best on the roster in the main title picture, right? So I could see where this goes now, right? Copeland comes in, faces Moxley, maybe even beats Moxley for the championship just for Christian Cage to cash in his little briefcase contract thing that he has, clipboard, cash in that contract, win the title off of Copeland, restart that feud, which was great, and go back down that direction. Maybe get a triple threat at like a Revolution, right, where, you know, maybe Moxley regains the title, right? Ultimately building up the super babyface to win the title. And I think it is going to be Darby at All In Texas. I think Darby wins the title there. I think that would be a beautiful picture. While they got to wait for Darby to do Everest. I think that's what they're waiting on, is for Darby to go do his Mount Everest climb. See if he even survives that thing. That's a dangerous stunt. And I'm not saying this because it's Darby. Darby's crazy. I don't like a lot of the things that he does. From a business perspective, I would never let an employee of mine, if I ran a wrestling company and I was planning big things behind Darby Allin, to do a Mount Everest climb. Because first off, the training for that is strenuous in and of itself. But the climb itself is super dangerous. There's a potentiality that he dies on the climb up. And from the resulting, you know, changes that it's going to do to the body on his way back down as well, right? You're not going to leave that climb different. If anyone could do it, it's Darby, but that's a dangerous feat to attempt. People have died doing it, and I don't think Darby will die. I hope he doesn't. But, you know, as a person, if I'm planning big things behind him, I think it's a little crazy to allow him to do it, right? Especially after what he's been through in 2024, where he's been run over by a bus, he survived death somehow. He scraped death hands this month or this year, right? So, but yeah, I could see, you know, see if Darby survives. If not, who's the next person up? You know, I could see the mid-card taking shape with, I think, Ricochet joins Bobby Lashley and what's the Hurt Syndicate. Ricochet was one of the initial members tapped by MVP when they did the Hurt Business in WWE. So I definitely think that's where they're headed. Ricochet versus Swerve with the Hurt Syndicate sort of getting involved in that. I think that's where we're headed with that. Omega Okada will be fun. Not quite certain where they're going with Monet in the TBS title or really the women's picture in general. I really wish Britt was in the middle of it. I'm not sure what's going on with that, right? I think Thunder Rosa wins the title at All In Texas, though. I really do. I think Athena gets involved as well at All In Texas at some point. She'll drop the ROH and come up to AEW. As someone who hasn't really paid attention to AEW, though, that's all guesses. That's all guesses for me, right? Where I think AEW's headed in 2025. I would like some, and when I say longer term, what I mean is like a Drew McIntyre, CM Punk type feud. Not long-term story as in like, you know, this happened 18 years ago and we're going to fulfill it and that's long. No. What I mean by long-term story is like we're going to start a brand new story, you know, say someone like Jericho, and we don't really have to use Jericho, I'm just using an example, Jericho and Sammy Guevara start a story together, right? And you start a story in January and you end it in December and you tell like a year-long story. That's what I want. I find something like that that'll tell me a story throughout the year. The women's division needs some help. I think, you know, when you really, because you spent a majority of 2024 telling the story of Toni Storm, getting that character over, did a fantastic job at that, if I can give props, as well as building Mariah May and Mina Shirakawa. That, let me tell you something. The rest of the women's division was kind of ass, let's just be honest. But that singular story between Toni Storm, Mariah May, the addition of Mina Shirakawa, while I didn't watch AEW every single week of the year, that may be the best story they told all year in the AEW picture. In terms of all three characters felt like it mattered. There were twists and turns throughout the whole year. the Mariah turning on Tony, Mariah turning on Mina, just fantastic story. Fantastic story. And that's the type of thing that if Tony Khan can do three or four of those same level type productions at the same time, while also giving the sickos the hardcore wrestling and the flippy shit, that perfectly, that would be a perfect show. Let's just be honest. That would make AEW a very watchable show, right? Because I'm not expecting everything. Because even WWE doesn't give me two or three full hours of a singular show. Even something like NXT, I don't watch everything on NXT and enjoy every single piece. But there's a lot in NXT that I do enjoy, right? And NXT does that thing where it's like for you know, if you're the flippy guy, we got Fraxium. If you're the promo guy, we got Trick Williams. He's not the best in the ring, but he can cut promos. And Ethan Page does well, right? And Chase used the little childish sort of story gimmick that's real fun and that doesn't really have a lot of meaning to it, but you could follow like a story, right? And so if AEW can become what NXT is, AEW will be a very watchable program. And so AEW learned very, very well. This is going to be a streaming war now. Max and Netflix, right? Ratings aren't going to matter. So let me tell you what's going to stay in 2024. Here's what needs to stay in 2024. Any talk of ratings, because they don't matter anymore. Because let me tell you what's going to happen. AEW fans around the world now are going to watch live on Max, right? Even in the U.S., they're going to watch on Max. It's more accessible. I can go from watching AEW to flip on Family Guy or not Family Guy, excuse me, South Park or anything else that's on Max. I don't have Max, so I don't know what's on there. Right? Just in the same way that I, having Netflix, I'm going to turn from Raw back to some comedy special or something, right? And so Raw's ratings don't matter. Dynamite's ratings do not matter. I also think Collision may be on Max as well. I could be wrong, right? So any talk of ratings needs to drop right now. Like, end it in 2024. Let's do that. Things were ending in 2024. Any talk of ratings. Because they literally do not matter anymore. They don't matter. Nielsen ratings are completely obsolete in the year 2025. Because one of WWE shows, those don't matter. And all of AEW's product literally does not matter, right? So talk of ratings need to disappear in the year 2025. But that's World's End, right? Let me talk about AEW, though, and this is where my rant comes on. So I've done a lot of praising of AEW in the first 33 minutes of this podcast, right? A lot of praising of AEW, right? And I know that that's like a new Christmas miracle. I'm in the spirit of the holidays, right? Let's slow the roll down. Let's talk about something I have a very big issue with, and that is Wrestle Dynasty. This is a new Japan show, and I wrote it down this way. I don't care about the card. We're not going to sit here and complain about the card. The card's actually fucking a banger, right? If I was a hardcore wrestling fan that wanted to wake up at 2 a.m. and watch the show, definitely would. If I really cared about the X's and O's and right and all of that, fucking fantastic card, right? But I have an issue from a business perspective for Tony Khan. Here's what that business perspective that really irritates me is: you're sacrificing the start of your new TV deal and the simulcast and everything on Max, and you're not promoting your best stars, and you're not promoting your best stars because you allow them to go to Japan to wrestle for another company. And so my rant is this: I would never allow this, right? I would never allow this. The Bucks. And it's only because you're starting a new TV deal that's paying you a lot of money and you're trying to market Max and you're going against your competition. Your competition is marketing the Netflix show by having the literal biggest stars in the company's histories, right? In the company's history, market it for this show. You got Rhea, maybe not that she's not the biggest women's wrestler in the company's history, but she's the biggest current wrestler in the women's division right now, right? You got Rhea and Liv. That's on the card. You got Solo. You got Roman Reigns. You're going to have probably The Rock show up. Cena's world tour final year will probably be on the show, right? So you have three generations of, like, the top star. The only thing you need more is Hulk Hogan. I highly doubt Hulk Hogan will be there. But you got Rock. You got Cena. You got Roman. Right, you got CM Punk, you got Seth Rollins, all of this marketed for the Netflix debut. All of this purposely for the fact of getting people to watch on Netflix. And how you respond is you go to the streaming war, and that's fine. But let me tell you exactly what is being presented for this episode of Dynasty on the first. Right, you get first blood in the streaming war. Right, you get to make the first impression in 2025 in the world of wrestling. And AEW, instead of having their big stars, the Kenny Omegas and the Young Bucks and Jack Perry and Mercedes Moné and all of that, instead of having that on the card, you have what exactly? You have the Death Riders, which is a very good team. Maybe, you know, you got Moxley, that's rated FTR. Edge and FTR. Okay, decent. Decent, right? You have Cassidy and Hangman Page. Nothing, you know, mind-blowing. You have the Hurt Syndicate versus the Acclaimed. Nothing mind-blowing. Jamie Hayter versus Julia Hart, nothing mind-blowing, right? And so you have the mid-card running the show, and then you're going to end the night with the Death Riders and rated FTR in a match that, because it's in Asheville, where Adam Copeland and FTR are at, you're going to do one of two things. You're either going to send the crowd home happy, And rated FTR is going to win the match, or you're going to get heel heat for the local area. You're going to have the Death Riders win, and then the show goes off air, and you get heat on Mox, right? But more than likely, you're going to have Copeland and FTR win the match. And it's very predictable because they live in that area, and that's the whole reason you probably are even there, right? And so while you have Monday Night Raw promoting the literal biggest stars in the company, the biggest stories, the biggest matches, you have on your card, right? And so that's my rant. And it's nothing more than, from a business perspective, I think making that first impression is important, and airing the mid-card because you want the rest of your big stars to be on the Japan show, I just don't think that that's good business, just personally. And that's just me. So let's move into WWE. Let's talk about the last ever Raw, at least in this current time period, on the USA Network. Right? Crazy, right? No longer will Monday Night Raw be live on cable television, but must be watched behind the Netflix pay wall, right? So what do we get? Well, we get the semifinals of the IC women's IC title tournament. You have Zoe Stark and Dakota Kai and Io Sky and Lyra Valkyria. Both were very good matches, but both very predictable. And this entire tournament has been very predictable. And I said this when they dropped the bracket the week before the show, the actual matches started, right? I said this at the very beginning of the tournament, that the final two would be Lyra versus Dakota. And I wasn't using some secret knowledge of the wrestling world. I was literally just using the clues they gave us. Because a month prior to this, they randomly, on an episode of Raw, aired a vignette for Lyra Valkyria and a vignette for Dakota Kai that seemingly seemed that she was going in a singles push direction. And then they announced this title. And then they announce the bracket and they're on opposite sides. And all it takes is a little bit of common sense and a keen eye for that type of detail. It's not that complicated sometimes. So like wrestling, I know Triple H tries to blow people off scent and stuff. And that's what they tried to do with the whole episode. Like, oh, what if Damage Control fights each other? Well, that's Triple H trying to throw us off the scent of what's staring right in front of us. You guys aired random vignettes by themselves. Nothing really followed up with it. And now we're getting that follow-up. It's Dakota versus Lyra. That's who they're pushing for this division. And I'm happy with whoever wins. I want it to be Dakota because Dakota is one of my favorites, and I think she deserves a push. But Lyra winning it, I think, immediately has an immediate story. With that story being Becky Lynch returning, picking up that feud from NXT. But I can also see this Triple H playing the little bit of copy paste repeat, where the person who attacked Kairi was actually Dakota, and copy paste repeat of Bianca probably being the one that attacked Jade, right? And so either way, this was super predictable, but very good matches. Just as the finals match next week will be a very, very, very good match. You get a very, 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 very good masterclass promo from Seth Rollins and CM Punk that sold the entirety of the debut on Netflix to me in one promo. If I wasn't going to watch before, this sold it to me in one promo. This has to be the main event. The rest was just a boring Monday Night Raw. Let's just be honest. Nothing special happened here. We got the two big moments, right, that really told the story going into next week. Rollins, Punk, and then Dakota versus Lyra. And that were the big two moments of the whole show for the immediate future, right? So we're going to end this. I know it's been about 40 minutes, 42 minutes at this point. I don't want to hold you guys here too long. It is, you know, New Year's Eve, and by the time you watch it, probably the New Year's, and you're probably partying. I don't want to keep you from that, right? We're going to end this with, what would I like to see for debut week of 2025? And so debut week starts on Friday and ends with New Year's Evil. And here's what I think we're going to see on debut week. We're going to start with Friday. I think John Cena shows up on Friday. It's the first three-hour episode of Raw. I think we get Cena. I think we get Rock to sort of set the importance and start a great rating for the new year, right? But I also think we get Cena on Monday. And I think on one of those days, we're going to get a foreshadowing between Cena and Gunther for their WrestleMania match. I don't, you know, some people are initially predicting that Cena gets a match at maybe Rumble and beats Gunther there. I think Cena wins the Rumble, which sets up Gunther Cena. But I think all of that seed for April gets planted in January, probably on the Netflix show. But I think it has to get planted now, and that can be seen as sort of big feud. And he can have other matches along the way, but that's the big feud heading into WrestleMania. I think it's Cena versus Gunther, where I think Cena gets 17 at Mania off of Gunther. What I want to see for the episode of on Netflix, the first episode on Netflix, is Roman and Solo to start the show. Roman, get the Ulafala back. He's now the tribal chief, head of the table, but now he has to go through the final boss. I think this is where we're headed to get to the final boss, or the final boss shows up and costs him the Ulafala, right? I could also see that, right? At some point, The Rock shows up at the start of this episode in this match, to set up Rock Roman. If it's going to happen, we'll know. I believe we'll know on Monday, January the 6th. I 100%. Punk and Rollins has to end the show. And I think it has to end in a no contest so that the final match of the feud happens at a big moment like WrestleMania, right? Wavy D said that first. I give him credit where it's due, but I 100% believe that's where we're headed with this story. I need Rhea to get the belt back and set up a new opponent in this world title, what this women's title picture, because for the last what feels like year has been Rhea versus Liv. And I need Rhea to get the belt back because the next legitimate contender will be Raquel. And I think we get that at Rumble. At Rumble, I do think it's going to be Raquel versus Rhea. And then ultimately, I believe the winner of Elimination Chamber will be Bianca Belair. And Bianca will get Rhea at WrestleMania. I believe that's how we get there. Tiffany needs to cash in on debut week at some point, whether it's this upcoming Friday, if it's the Netflix show, if it's New Year's Evil. She needs to cash in on Nia Jax. We can get the rematch at Rumble and get the eventual Charlotte Flair return to show. And this is what I, this is why I would do it on Monday. Have Nia there for whatever reason, right? Unless they're going to, this is SmackDown, right? So this is why I would do it on Friday. Cash in on Friday. Charlotte shows up, stares down Tiffany Stratton. Don't really see her all that often the rest of, you know, January, February. Heading into March, she shows back up once the match at Mania. And boom. I do think she wins Rumble, though. But after she wins Rumble, right? And so it could be just as simple as she shows up on the 3rd. We don't see her the rest of the month. She shows up on February 1st as entrant 30 in the Women's Royal Rumble. Wins it. Calls out Tiffany Stratton. 2 appearances in the first month of the year is all we need from her, right? And then we tell the story the rest of the way, setting up the big Charlotte taking the pin at Mania to get that big rocket boost to Tiffany Stratton to become the next big thing in the women's division, right? I think, while I think the Mania match will be Jade versus, Bianca versus Rhea. I think Bianca versus Jade also will start with Bianca being shown as the attacker. And whether Jade shows up doesn't have to really matter. She can wait until Mania to show up. When Bianca wins the title, Jade can come back and say, Bianca, you attacked me to because you got tired of me, right? And Bianca could turn heel and say, you were holding me down. Look what happened now that I got you out of my way. I'm champion again. And then we could set up SummerSlam Jade versus Bianca for the championship. And then the last thing I need to see will be at New Year's Evil with Julia and Oba Femi as NXT champions in their respective divisions, setting free Trick Williams and setting free Roxanne Perez to come to the main roster, and for new stories to be bred there with the NXT divisions. And with all of that happening, that would be a very successful debut week for me if I was WWE. So let me know what you guys want from debut week. I'll tell you this, just looking forward to 2025, some things that I'm looking forward to. Drew McIntyre, I think, needs to be in the world title picture pretty early in the year, right? I think what needs to happen is Cena gets the belt off Gunther, McIntyre gets the belt off Cena. That's how I would do it. I think Ultimately, Cody needs to lose the belt. Cody needs to lose the belt, and I think it needs to go to Owens. I need Owens to win the belt as well. Having a McIntyre-Owens championship at the top would be insane. I need Big Bronson Reed, when he gets back, probably around SummerSlam, to have just the summer, fall, winter of the year of his career. And I think he's set for a very big push in that picture of the heavyweight championship. Bron Breakker, there's a lot of mouths to feed. I think there's going to be some roster change in the next week or two to put people in positions that will benefit them. I need the Street Profits pushed. I want heel Bianca. I want a year of the heels in WWE, right? And I know because when I mean a year of the heels, I mean like dark, like because we had like 4 years of Roman Reigns, right? Where Roman Reigns was sort of just like an evil dictator, but really wasn't necessarily evil. He just was sort of self-involved, right? He was just very narcissistic. I want like a year of the evil, devious acts, the Kevin Owens, the Drew McIntyres, those type of heels. I need a year of the heels in WWE. Even have someone like Oba Femi turn into that type of heel. I need that type of, you know, Ethan Page is going to probably be that in NXT with what he did to Javon Evans. So I need that type of year to just, right, be, and what you can then set up then is then that 2026 is the year of the babyface, where you can build up Javon Evans to be the savior of NXT against Oba Femi. Right. And even if it's just the beginning of the first half of the year, building Oba Femi as a monster heel, right, to build up. And that way, when you get to Heat Wave or Halloween Havoc or something later in the year where Javon Evans comes in as this massive babyface, David type character that can take down the Goliath known as Oba Femi, bro, that would be the story of the year if they could pull that off. Right, give me an Owens McIntyre run main roster where they're just doing diabolical stuff, injuring people and taking names and doing all of that devious stuff that Kevin Owens and McIntyre can do, just to build up some sort of savior on the main roster, whether it's Trick Williams or whether it's whoever you have planned, even if it's like a Bron Breakker, right? I need some type of feud like that. Even if it's like a Dominic Mysterio, right? Imagine like a face Dominic, right? Because Dom's got a lot of respect now on him, and I need Dom, in the, you know, Dom as world champion just for a month would be hilarious, right? Imagine, you know, I need you to build some devious, you know, as you're building these devious characters in Owens and McIntyre and what Bronson Reed could be, having someone being built alongside of it as sort of the new baby face outside of Cody and outside of Roman Reigns' current character, right? Even if it's Jay. Like, imagine you have all this devious stuff happen with McIntyre and Rollins and Owens and Bronson Reed, right? Just and Solo Sikoa, right? Imagine that type of, like, deviousness that could come between them. Just to get a Jey Uso-led, like, faction together and be the savior of... Right, and it can't be the blood. It can't be Roman and Jimmy and Sammy, right? It has to be Jay and Jey Uso. And, you know, at one point I would say an Otis, but he's sort of back down to, like, comical status. But building up a legitimate, you know, like a Dragunov when he returns, would be crazy, right? That's why I'm a little bit upset that Ricochet left, because Ricochet could have, if he would have stayed, he wouldn't have been, he wouldn't be in a position where he's getting toilet paper. And I know it's character and it's the gimmick they're doing, but he wouldn't be in that position. He would be probably positioned to be one of the big baby faces in the company of WWE this year. And he could have been in for a major push, right? But I'm looking at, like who can we bring in the men's division that would be, like, the super babyface that could save the world from, right? And that's why I think Cena's run needs to be taking place. You know, give him 17 if you're going to give him the record super early. Have him beat Gunther. And then have McIntyre beat him sort of deviously, right? And then, you know, head into like a SummerSlam with Drew as the champion. Maybe it could be Priest as this super baby face. So whoever it is, right? You get the point that I'm trying to build, right? Give me a year of the heels to where you can build the next big baby face that isn't Cody Rhodes, right? So that's what I want out of 2025. And what I expect we'll see on debut week, some of the things that I would book if I was in charge. Some things that I think if you just look at the current product, it might be easy to predict. But let me know what you guys think. Overall, thanks again for watching or listening, however you are. Have a great New Year's Eve. Happy New Year to everyone who watches and listens. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart for everything that you guys have done, just listening and supporting. Like, share, subscribe, leave a review on audio, however you listen. And until next time, I'll catch you in the year 2025 with season 4. As always, me and Wavy D will be back on Tuesday episodes on January the 14th. And you may get an episode before then, probably around like the 10th. I think that's that Friday. That will be like a review week. Our debut 2025 debut week review of all the three shows. That's probably what's going to be that first episode of season 4. But until then, I'll see you in season 4. Like, share, subscribe, join the Discord. And again, just I appreciate all of you. Have a great new year, and I will see you on the next episode of the Slappin' Meat Wrestling Podcast. So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEW, WWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay, Slappin' Meat Wrestling every Tuesday.